Eddie caught himself in the small evasion of looking away, forced his glance back to meet hers, and answered. He gave in. He signed their gift certificate at the last moment. Oh. The sound conveyed no shock or censure. It was merely a vocal punctuation mark, denoting the acceptance of a fact. Have you heard from Quentin Daniels? No. He sent no letter or message for me? No. He guessed the thing she feared, and it reminded him of a matter he had not reported. Dagny, there's another problem that's been growing all over the system since you left. Since May 1st. It's the frozen trains.
The what?
We've had trains abandoned on the line, on some passing track in the middle of nowhere, usually at night, with the entire crew gone. They just leave the train and vanish. There's never any warning given or any special reason. It's more like an epidemic. It hits the men suddenly, and they go. It's been happening on other railroads, too. Nobody can explain it. But I think that everybody understands. It's the directive that's doing it. It's our men's form of protest. They try to go on, and then they suddenly reach a moment when they can't take it any longer. What can we do about it? He shrugged. Oh, well, who is John Galt? She nodded thoughtfully. She did not look astonished. The telephone rang, and the voice of her secretary said, Mr. Wesley Mooch calling from Washington, Miss Taggart. Her lips stiffened a little, as at the unexpected touch of an insect. It must be for my brother, she said. No, Miss Taggart, for you. All right, put him on. Miss Taggart, said the voice of Wesley Mooch, in the tone of a cocktail party host, I was so glad to hear you've regained your health that I wanted to welcome you back in person. I know that your health required a long rest, and I appreciate the patriotism that made you cut your leave of absence short in this terrible emergency. I wanted to assure you that you can count on our cooperation in any step you now find it necessary to take, our fullest cooperation, assistance, and support. If there are any special exceptions you might require, please feel certain that they can be granted. She let him speak, even though he had made several small pauses inviting an answer. When his pause became long enough, she said, I would be much obliged if you would let me speak to Mr. Weatherby.
Why, of course, Miss Taggart, any time you wish.
Why, that is...
Do you mean now?
Yes, right now. He understood, but he said, Yes, Miss Taggart. When Mr. Weatherby's voice came on the wire, it sounded cautious. Yes, Miss Taggart. Of what service can I be to you? You can tell your boss that if he doesn't want me to quit again, as he knows I did, he is never to call me or speak to me. Anything your gang has to tell me, let them send you to tell it. I'll speak to you, but not to him. You may tell him that my reason is what he did to Hank Reardon when he was on Reardon's payroll. If everybody else has forgotten it, I haven't.
It is my duty to assist the nation's railroads at any time, Miss Taggart.
Mr. Weatherby sounded as if he were trying to avoid the commitment of having heard what he had heard. But a sudden note of interest crept into his voice as he asked slowly, thoughtfully, with guarded shrewdness.
Am I to understand, Miss Taggart, that it is your wish to deal exclusively with me in all official matters? May I take this as your policy?
She gave a brief, harsh chuckle. Go ahead, she said. You may list me as your exclusive property. Use me as a special item of pull and trade me all over Washington. But I don't know what good that will do you, because I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to trade favors. I'm simply going to start breaking your laws right now, and you can arrest me when you feel that you can afford to.
I believe that you have an old-fashioned idea about law, Miss Taggart. Why speak of rigid, unbreakable laws? Our modern laws are elastic and open to interpretation according to circumstances.
Then start being elastic right now, because I'm not, and neither are railroad catastrophes. She hung up and said to Eddie, in the tone of an estimate passed on physical objects, They'll leave us alone for a while. She did not seem to notice the changes in her office, the absence of Nat Taggart's portrait, the new glass coffee table where Mr. Losey had spread for the benefit of visitors, a display of the loudest humanitarian magazines with titles of articles headlined on their covers. She heard with the attentive look of a machine equipped to record, not to react, Eddie's account of what 1 month had done to the railroad. She heard his report on what he guessed about the causes of the catastrophe. She faced with the same look of detachment a succession of men who went in and out of her office with overhurried steps and hands fumbling in superfluous gestures. He thought that she had become impervious to anything. But suddenly, while pacing the office, dictating to him a list of track-laying materials and where to obtain them illegally, she stopped and looked down at the magazines on the coffee table. Their headlines said, "The New Social Conscience," "Our Duty to the Underprivileged," "Need versus Greed." With a single movement of her arm, the abrupt, explosive movement of sheer physical brutality such as he had never seen from her before, she swept the magazines off the table and went on, her voice reciting a list of figures without a break, as if there were no connection between her mind and the violence of her body. Late in the afternoon, finding a moment alone in her office, she telephoned Hank Reardon. She gave her name to his secretary, and she heard, in the way he said it, the haste with which he had seized the receiver. "Dagny?"
"Hello, Hank. I'm back."
"Where?"
"In my office."
She heard the things he did not say in the moment's silence on the wire. Then he said,
"I suppose I'd better start bribing people at once to get the ore to start pouring rail for you."
"Yes, as much of it as you can. It doesn't have to be Reardon metal. It can be."
The break in her voice was almost too brief to notice. But what it held was the thought, Reardon metal rail for going back to the time before heavy steel? Perhaps back to the time of wooden rails with strips of iron? "It can be steel, any weight, anything you can give me."
"All right. Dagny, do you know that I've surrendered Reardon metal to them? I've signed the gift certificate."
"Yes, I know."
"I've given in."
"Who am I to blame you? Haven't I?"
He did not answer, and she said, "Hank, I don't think they care whether there's a train or a blast furnace left on Earth. We do. They're holding us by our love of it, and we'll go on paying so long as there's still one chance left to keep one single wheel alive and moving in token of human intelligence. We'll go on holding it afloat like our drowning child, and when the flood swallows it, we'll go down with the last wheel and the last syllogism. I know what we're paying, but price is no object any longer."
"I know."
"Don't be afraid for me, Hank. I'll be all right by tomorrow morning."
"I'll never be afraid for you, darling. I'll see you tonight."